one of the great stories we're going to hear now from award-winning journalist and music critic. His work has been in Billboard, Rolling Stone, and he has over a dozen books about pop music. He's written about the Stones, the Grateful Dead, and others. Joel Selvin joins us. And Joel, in your new book, one of the great stories in there is about that recording session. It was quite something, wasn't it?
Man, that record, I must have heard it 1,000 times. And I mean, even now, every time it gives me goosebumps.
And I love your depiction of what happened in the recording studio with Tina Turner. Mick Jagger was there just watching, and Tina ended up stripping down to just her bra when she recorded that. Correct?
Lights out. Midnight. Yeah. Let's just take off my blouse and let's just sing this. And sing it, and sing it, and sing it. Because this was not a kind of music that she'd ever made before. It's not a kind of music anybody'd ever made before. This was music out of Phil Spector's imagination, his head. And they left the studio that night after singing for 6 hours without knowing if they'd gotten it done.
Phil Spector saw Ike and Tina in Southern California, and Joel Selvin writes about that whole scene in the book Hollywood Eden, electric guitars, fast cars, and the myth of the California paradise. For a long time, no major record labels other than Capitol had headquarters in Los Angeles. New York was the music power center. What changed that led to the West Coast music boom, Joel?
Surf music. Isn't that amazing? Yeah, surf music. Sweeping the nation in 1963 and 64. Landlocked radio stations in cities just diving into this Beach Boys and the surf instrumentals and Jan and Dean. Yeah, and that was music that was like folk music to those kids that were growing up on the coast. Those kids wrote those songs from their own lives. They did know people who had woodies with no rear window.
you write a lot about Jan and Dean, Jan Barry, Dean Torrance, and they actually were close with Brian Wilson, weren't they?
Yeah. Brian Wilson's first record with the Beach Boys was pretty much sort of a Jan and Dean knockoff. He's obviously a huge fan, and when they finally did meet, they went straight into the studio together and came up with Surf City. And Surf City was the first number one hit out of that new Los Angeles rock scene. The Beach Boys had had a couple of records on the charts, but Surf City was the one that slammed home.
Yeah, and that famous opening line of Surf City, is Brian Wilson singing on that as well?
Brian Wilson is singing on that. He is a co-author of the song. Jan Barry is singing on that. A couple of Mexican-American guys that Jan knew from University High are singing on that. The only person who isn't singing on that is Dean.
Yeah, we have to hear a little bit of that right now.
Yeah.
It still sounds really good. It doesn't sound like a record that's, 50-plus years old?
Yeah. Those records were really well made. And the musicians on them were just extraordinarily skillful musicians. That is the beginnings of the group of studio musicians who came to be known as the Wrecking Crew. Hal Blaine on drums. Earl Palmer also on drums. Earl played on all the Fats Domino and Little Richard records.
You write that rock and roll was teen music and Southern California teens were a breed apart. How so?
Oh, man. The kids that went to University High, and that's Jan, Dean, Nancy Sinatra, Bruce Johnson of the Beach Boys, and even the girl whose father wrote about her and called her Gidget, was in that high school class. So was Ryan O'Neill and James Brolin. It's an amazing group of kids living 10 minutes from the beach, in just the most beautiful place in the world. This is Los Angeles in the late 50s. No smog, no freeways, no traffic jams, just a series of villages connected by these huge, broad avenues, and year-round beautiful weather. And just around the late 50s, the whole idea of getting on those boards and riding the waves started to catch on with youth of California. So, and I mean, Disneyland was started in 1955, and he broadcast every week pictures of this fantastic amusement park out of the strawberry fields in Anaheim on network TV, the one of the most popular shows of its time. And I think everywhere, young people in America looked at that and saw Southern California and thought, wow.
Yeah,
it, you know what? It was a wow.
As you're right, the community created the culture, and it seemed like everyone knew each other, and it was a very close-knit community of kids. More from Joel Selvin, and the book is Hollywood Eden. We'll take a quick break here. We're talking about the beginnings of the Southern California rock scene with San Francisco music writer Joel Selvin, whose new book is called Hollywood Eden. And Joel, reading the book, I learned that Jan Berry of Jan and Dean fame really showed Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys the ropes of producing and recording, didn't he?
Well, when Brian first went into the studio to make his records, you know, Jan Berry had already been in the business like 5 years or so. Baby Talk was a big hit record for Jan and Dean in 1959, but even more, he'd had Jan and Arnie on the charts with Jenny Lee when he was a senior in high school. So he was a veteran, and he hired session musicians and worked with producers and done all these things that in this world that Brian was just stepping into. And they became very much close friends and willing collaborators.
And Good Vibrations, you write 13 musicians, 26 takes, right? I'm picking
up good. That's got to be just one night. Brian spent 8 months working on that record. There were many, many finished versions of Good Vibrations.
You know, your book reminds me a little bit of the documentary, which I really enjoyed, called Echoes in the Canyon. Did you see that?
Oh, sure. That was a nice film, yeah.
And about Brian Wilson, he really introduced California as a pop concept. And a state of mind, more than a state of the union. I think you say that in the book.
Brian Wilson just created this international vision of California based kind of on his life, or at least people's he knew, their lives. I mean, Brian didn't surf. He didn't swim. But his brother, Dennis, used to take the bus down to the ocean from Hawthorne. It's about a 20-minute ride down Manhattan Beach Boulevard, and sit on a seawall and watch these guys work out in the waves. It was a sport that was pretty much relegated to just a very few beaches in Southern California until about then.
Yeah, where they grew up, Hawthorne, that was inland. It wasn't anywhere near the ocean, was it?
Hawthorne's a lower middle class, post-war, single-family housing place, about another 5 minutes east of the 405 from LAX. I mean, it's really just south-central Los Angeles is what they call it now. Mm-hmm. But at that time, it was a place where somebody who worked in the sheet metal business could own a house, like Brian's dad.
Yeah, they were minutes away from the Mattel factory. Was that the company?
Isn't that fantastic?
Yeah, they made the Barbie doll there. Yeah.
The Barbie doll and the Beach Boys created pretty much in the same neighborhood at the same time.
That's wild. I love
it. That's an amazing convergence to me.
Yeah, it's a great story you tell about He's a Rebel by the Crystals. And it turns out the Crystals, even though they're on the label, they didn't really make He's a Rebel. Tell that story, Joel.
Well, the Spector had heard the song and wanted to get it recorded really quick, because he also was under the impression that somebody else was going to be recording a version of it. He was in Los Angeles, where at the time his operation was based in New York. So he pulled together a group of studio musicians calling his high school friend. Bill went to Fairfax High. Steve Douglas, who was the sax player from Duane Eddy's band, and he'd been playing sessions around town. Steve put together a group of studio musicians, and this was the first time that these guys really played together. That would be they would come to be called the Wrecking Crew. And, of course, the Crystals were back in New York, but there wasn't really, they didn't have the rights to their name. The record company did. So Bill just brought in a bunch of session singers, specifically one called Darlene Wright, who he renamed Darlene Love, and she sang the lead vocal on that. But that's not the only Crystals record that Darlene sang the lead on, too. I mean, she sang on To Do Run Run. Spector's work was always in the studio. That's how he always envisioned it. And he's another one of these Hollywood kids who had his first number one hit when he was a senior in high school.
And Gene Pitney wrote He's a Rebel, right?
Gene Pitney wrote He's a Rebel, and Pitney had recorded, Spector had produced Pitney's first big hit, Every Breath You Take, when he was like a 19-year-old wunderkind in New York.
Here's the result of that recording session. Studio A, Gold Star Studios on Santa Monica, out in L.A., Friday, July 13th, 1962.
Ooh,
Hal Blaine, the great drummer from the Wrecking Crew, and this is what they came up with. As Joel Selvin writes in the book Hollywood Eden, this was the big bang of Los Angeles music. The Wrecking Crew musicians, the young rebels in t-shirts and jeans, rough and ready to rock and roll with guidance and direction from a handful of ecstatic visionaries. They were going to reshape American popular music. It's all in the book Hollywood Eden. Joel Selvin, great talking to you. Love the book.
Oh,
love the music.
Great to be with you. Thanks a lot. I really, it's great to be in Chicago, even on the radio.
All right, you take care now.